You're listening to a Mag Classic special presentation on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Get the microphone so you don't crash the car.
There it is.
Okay, we're good. All right, we are recording a podcast in a moving vehicle.
All right.
Oh, man.
We are ahead of our time.
I'm scared. Oh, the microphone's back there. I'm going to screw up the levels by talking directly into this phone.
No. You don't even really have to hold the phone.
I'm holding the phone.
Hold the phone.
That guy is speeding in a 45.
Good.
All right.
What's his license plate?
This is...
Just so everyone listening can track it.
Yeah. Let's crowdsource our vengeance. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a Fat Gatsby Triple Radio, recorded on the road to Mag Classic. As it is known this year.
We give you the latitude and longitude, but it's changing constantly.
Yep. In the car, we have me, Tim. Dave is driving.
Yeah.
Beast is riding.
Yes.
And Steve is also here.
I'm trying to stay put, but this seat keeps moving me around.
We just keep being propelled forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to Mag Classic this weekend, which will be in the past by the time you hear this. It will have happened. It's too late. You cannot come because it is done.
So stop the recording and start it again.
Yeah.
We always send podcasts into the past. Why don't we send one into the future sometime?
We can do that.
I guess.
You can do anything with.
I'm just saying.
Money.
Why don't we do a time capsule podcast? Like actually bury a podcast.
Do you have a
shovel, yes.
Okay. You have to get a podcast safe, a container
one.
That's podcast tight.
I'm way ahead of you. I'm way in the future on
then
this.
Why?
I've already buried the podcast. All you have to say is yes, and I'm going to say aha!
All right. When you're listening to this in the future, enjoy the future, really. That's all.
I hope so.
It's the future, and things are probably going to be
cool. I hope something
doesn't
happen this weekend.
Yeah.
Wink.
That makes it bad. And people listen to this podcast like, look at these assholes. They are so out of touch with our times. They're the worst.
We're making all these jokes that are insensitive, but we don't know it.
It's because
of the events of this weekend.
Oh, my God. It's September 10th right now. And if we were having this podcast on September 10th, 2001.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We're going to have a great weekend.
Never forget.
That was a Tuesday. Anyways.
It was a Tuesday. Yeah.
And what we're talking about is the day.
I forgot it was a Tuesday.
The day after the 20th birthday of PlayStation. The day after the Dreamcast launch in the
U.S.
Yeah,
that's
never
that's
forget those things.
Never forget.
Yeah. So we're going to Mag Classic. We're doing some panels. We don't have a table, so that should be pretty badass.
Yeah, that's great for us. You won't find us.
Yeah, and hopefully we will have recorded a bunch of other stuff with people we don't get to see very often down there.
It'd
be amazing. And that's my hopes, and that's what past Tim hopes for future Tim. But we'll see who is right.
Well, you'll see.
National disasters might happen.
Yeah.
Right.
But we gotta make the time pass on this car ride, which we are about halfway through. We made our stop, so now that's behind us. So
we can only quote 80s cartoons for so long.
Yeah.
Well, that's wrong. That's just not right.
Well, even the 80s could only do it for 10 years.
So yeah, we're spicing things up. Spicing up this car ride.
Oh, man.
After a drop in at Sheets.
Yeah. Things will get spicy. Salty.
Yeah.
Shabbat.
Yeah, unlike our, I guess, other roadcasts where we talk about what we're going to do at the convention. This is going to be more like a regular triple-ish radio.
I want to spend more time talking to you people.
It's not going to be super regular because I'm here.
Yeah, Steve's here.
And Dave is in person.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. And Ben's not here, which is great.
Fuck that guy.
Nah, what am I saying? He's never on the podcast.
Yeah, me and Steve haven't driven with not Ben in a while. long time.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, yeah, it's kind of weird that us four are in the car together.
Yeah. I've been coping with it by pretending that Dave is just a short man.
That's easy. That's an easy substitution to make.
Dave, how scared are you of everything?
I'm only...
In that you have to think about it, yeah, you're not Ben.
No,
like,
okay.
You've lost,
yeah,
the...
I am a little scared of... Not scared, but,
uh-huh,
like...
Your biggest phobia.
My biggest phobia is actually driving in inclement weather.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah.
So, like...
That's not an irrational fear.
So, you know...
No, it happens a lot in New York.
Yes.
It could happen right now.
Happens a lot on trips to MAGFest, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave was shitting his pantaloons when we were driving back in an ice storm a couple years ago.
Well, so was Ben, so we're getting...
Like, I was... It was fucking stressful.
No, that was really...
But, like, Dave was, on his phone, like, looking at
the weather patterns.
I was driving.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Yeah, Dave spices up the danger. He's like, you're, like, checking the weather patterns. Like, would it be easier to divert towards Rochester? Should we go this way?
Yeah.
Should we do this? Oh, is this going to break up soon? It just went from shitty, slushy ice storm to fucking fog.
Oh, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I was petrified.
That was some of the worst.
Yeah.
Driving. I wasn't petrified. I have confidence in my skills, but it was pretty stressful.
Well, I never have problems in the confidence of my own skills in shitty weather.
It's everybody else.
It's everybody else.
Yeah, that comes from driving in Buffalo.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
You think people in Buffalo would be excellent at driving through slush and snow, but it's like, you know, the second there's some precipitation, like, everyone's like, oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, fuck, I don't know how to drive anymore.
Yeah.
And
I never had a problem with, like, ice and snow, but, man, as soon as it gets, like,
sunny out,
Well, actually, you know, driving into the sun sucks too. But
yeah. Driving sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, let's never do it again.
Why do we do this?
It's so unpleasant.
Why don't we just work at home?
Well, Dave, you were saying how you wanted to minimize your night driving on this trip.
Yeah.
Because you don't like driving at night. Yet I prefer driving at night.
Oh, it hurts my eyes.
Well, because when I drive during the day for too long, it hurts my eyes.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. If there was only some way that the two of you could somehow work out to be
have someone who isn't comfortable
time.
Driving ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if the sun went down, I should have taken over the wheel, I guess.
But we did still try.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah, I always drive fucking cars.
I know.
I never drive the toaster.
I don't ride in cars anymore. I like drive when me and Lauren go anywhere.
You're gonna be that asshole that's gonna ride with somebody. You go for the driver's seat. You did it today, didn't you? Because Dave's driving and you went for the driver's seat.
No, I was going for his cock.
Yep.
Likely story.
I would have let it happen too.
He's lunging for his penis.
Yeah, no, I'm always the driver. I fucking chauffeur my wife around everywhere. It just happens by default. Just I am always.
Because you don't like Jan's driving.
No, she's a great driver. She just wants to do everything.
Yeah, so do I sometimes.
Yeah.
Like not concentrate on the road.
Yeah.
Host a podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know if the
instance.
People at home can hear this, but Dave, you're hitting that rumble strip.
You know what? I feel like it's way close. I feel like it's way in.
No, it's right on top of the white stripe.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
You don't have... There's no, like, leeway like there is in New York.
That's bullshit. I mean, it's not, but it's probably for our safety.
I mean, Pennsylvania, they want to wake you up before you're off the road.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's where...
I'm fine.
They want to wake you up so you're awake for the crash.
Right. Where's the thrill? I want to be off the road by the time I'm snapping awake.
The other thing, I have not driven a very long distance in years.
Yeah, I've only done.
I haven't
few,
in
really.
Months.
Yeah.
Right. I drove to a lot of conventions over the years.
We've been to visit my sister in Long Island, and somehow, like, I've conned my parents into we ride with them, and my dad drives the whole way. And
that sounds great.
Yep.
Yeah, well, it's funny because...
So, I don't mean to complain.
Yeah.
I'm happy to, take a
no,
turn.
No, I had to, pull teeth to get you to fucking volunteer. Shit.
Yeah, sorry about your teeth there.
I was going to stay quiet. I have a good teeth guy.
He's got a good teeth guy?
Yeah.
We should come up with a name for that profession.
I say tooth nurse.
Tooth nurse? Yeah, that's pretty good. Tutherman.
I was going to say Dr. Tooth Fairy, but it's already taken.
Yeah.
Dr. Tooth.
No one's taken Dr. Teeth.
Dr. Teeth. When we were originally, I feel like when we were originally trucking down to conventions with a bunch of people, it was always like, let's get people into the biggest vehicle possible.
Yeah.
Which eventually turned into, let's get into the most fuel-efficient vehicle possible.
Yeah, right. Well, I was...
They were never the same thing.
I was really kind of waffling between taking this and taking, like, our RAV4, which would have been more spacious and comfortable for you guys.
But this is fine, because, one, we don't have... Well, the big thing is we don't have the table or all the good and all that shit, so... I mean, this is just dandy.
I'm relieved that you have, like, ample trunk room here.
Like, Ben's backseat sucks because it has the dome that... comes down.
What?
Like,
you can turn the screen off.
Is it bothering you?
No, but it will.
No, it's not bothering me.
It's actually...
Okay, drain the battery.
But it's plugged in.
I kind of like it.
Okay, all right. I don't want to accidentally stop the... That's... I was just examining it, trying to figure out if I fuck something up.
Yeah.
But the number's going bigger, though the timeline isn't moving, so I think we're all right.
All right.
Who's playing some fucking video games, motherfuckers?
I played a ton. I wrote them down in my laptop and then transferred them to my phone. But, whatever. I really want to go to that video store that's still open.
There's a video store?
It's a video store and it's not Blockbuster.
Wait a minute.
I love fucking...
If we rent from there, that means we could probably rent a game for the whole weekend. So
We can just independent
rent it,
video
bring
stores
it back.
Sell video games. They don't know what the fuck they're worth.
Yeah.
That's how I found, like, Ikaruga for GameCube.
I don't want to talk to you about that right now.
Yeah. You know what, Dave? I got news for you. If you rent a game from a video store...
Yeah.
...and you don't ever want to go back to that video store again...
Yeah.
...you bought that game.
There was, like, a little mom-and-pop...
so subtle.
There was a little mom-and-pop, like, convenience store that opened up really close to my house in Sodas Point. Yep. And, like, we went in, and they had some games to rent.
There's another sheet. Should we stop?
Yes.
Nah.
This place is lousy.
And so
I'm almost done with my coffee.
And it was just like, you know, they only had a few things on the shelf.
In
they were like just open.
Feet, slight right onto
God,
North Center Street.
Shut up. They didn't have a ton of stuff on the shelves. It was like they were just starting up. They had a few games out to rent. And I rented Wizards and Warriors.
Yeah.
And we went back the next day to return it. The place was closed and never opened again.
Wow.
I'm fairly certain, looking back on it, that the games that they had for rent were the kids' games that was there. There was a kid there.
In a half mile, continue on.
So they're just, like, renting out the NES games they had. And so I rented Wizards of Warriors, and then, like, we went to return it, and they just weren't there.
I'm just trying to get this
poor kid.
I can't get that stupid
Dash. That poor kid lost his copy of Wizards of Warriors, which I got for $1. So... Yay!
I also played that game on a rental, although I didn't need to keep it, it is a fond memory of rentalness.
Yeah.
Thanks for the business plan, Mom and Dad.
Like, I didn't get to rent that many games, so, like, the few I did, like, Wizards and Warriors, and I believe that really rare Flintstones Nintendo game.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, like, those are the ones that I'm just like, man. And that one I've been thinking about recently, because someone put up a picture, and I'm just like, fuck, I want to play that game.
So what have people played recently?
Oh, a couple things.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it while you're driving around this roundabout?
As long as we're going through a roundabout
thing. Roundabout game talk with Dave Ottavino.
I really want to play Roundabout. I really like that game.
I started playing Zeo Drifter, which is free this month on PlayStation Plus.
It is?
Hey, I don't have Plus anymore.
Yeah, me neither.
Mine just ran out, too, and I just bought a new card.
I've been waiting for a sale.
I got it $10 off. Not an extraordinary sale, but...
It's enough.
My problem is when I went to re-up, I saw a deal that Best Buy had on through eBay, or it was on eBay through Best Buy, that was $30, but it was gone. And so now I'm like, well, fuck.
Yep.
I missed the good deal, so all the $10 off deals can go fuck themselves.
Well, that's the thing, is I've been waiting for a $35, but... Yeah, it's Zeo Drifter. That's Mutant Muds.
Yes, that's Renegade Kid, makers of Mutant Muds. It's, in many ways, Mutant Muds Part 2, Metroid Edition.
Right. Because I really like Mutant Muds, so...
Yeah, Mutant Muds was a really cool platformer. And it's interesting, you know, I'm not... on PlayStation Plus, I think it's only on... PS4 and Vita.
Continue on Pennsylvania 357.
Right, and that's what I'm playing. I happened to already own it on 3DS. So it's pretty trivial. It's incidental that it happens to be on PlayStation Plus this month. Gotcha. It's just that's what sort of made me think to finally sit down and play it. And I remember reading Jeremy Parrish's review of it, where he sort of described it as, like, an unfinished sketch of a game. It does a lot of things well, but doesn't really follow through on a few concepts.
That's what kept me from buying it, actually.
Well, I think the only thing that I would add to that is that it's hard to stress enough that it's a really good game. It's a totally solid, high-quality in every way Metroidvania. And, you know, does a lot to...
How much does it add to the genre, though?
Oh, nothing.
Okay. That's kind of... As much as I love the genre, I feel like you kind of have to add something now.
Yeah.
Like, because there's so many.
Well, you could say that the thing that it adds is the Mutant Mud's plane switching, which is certainly cool, and...
Yes.
You know, I think it's contextualized a bit better than it was in Mutant Muds, where it was sort of the defining feature of that game.
Yeah, yeah.
That and it being a highly competent platformer, even when played on a touchscreen. This game... I gotta preface by saying it does so almost everything really, really well. That the fact that it just, as Jeremy Parrish said, lacks a certain... something is kind of what you tend to fixate on. I think the biggest thing for me is that, and maybe this is just me, there is a huge disparity in difficulty in enemy encounters. Like, most of the 90% of the enemy encounters in the game are meaningless. They're so easy. The enemies don't pose a challenge necessarily. They are purely just there to be an obstacle that you need to shoot at, and then all of a sudden you hit one or two slightly larger enemies where you need to, like, memorize attack patterns, and suddenly it's a whole new game. Like, there's no real difficulty ramp-up between the easiest, most common enemies and, like, the couple really, really tough enemies. It's just, suddenly it's a whole other game.
Are you describing bosses?
Some of them are bosses, some of them are just incidental enemies, like, you know, in amidst these planetary caves. It cribs a lot from the original Metroid. It is, like, you know, a cuter, more colorful original Metroid.
Does it have a map?
Yeah. It's totally got the Metroid mini-map and everything. It's got everything. It is Metroid. What it made me think, I almost want to call it Metroid 6. Because it feels like it iterates more on, even though it looks like Metroid 1, it iterates more on the sort of the even-numbered Metroids, Metroid 2 and Metroid 4. Because it feels a little arbitrary, the way things are roped off. It's not quite as organic. And again, that's fine. It's a really competent Metroidvania. It hits all the bullet points Metroidvania is supposed to hit. And the music's really nice. The graphics are really nice.
Yeah, I really like that guy.
The controls are really nice.
I think that they only have... I think he's only done music for Renegade Kid.
For Renegade Kid?
I can't say for sure, but...
So it's a really cool game, but it definitely just lacks a certain something.
What do you think if they made a sequel? Do you think that they could improve on it, or do you think they should let it go?
Oh, no. They could totally make a more robust... Here's the thing. It feels like a Metroidvania that is disappointing as a retail release, but if it was part of, like, a retro game challenge card...
Oh, yeah.
Like, that feels like the scale and scope of this game. Like, almost be, you know, the kind of elongated minigame that you found that had with that retro game challenge was about. And in that sense, it would be stellar. Like, if this was a game on retro game challenge, you'd be like, oh, you gotta play this Metroidvania they put on retro game challenge. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But as a standalone release, you're kind of like, it sort of just feels like a fully developed minigame. A sequel where the ideas were more fleshed out. Something Jeremy mentions in his review is that you fight the same boss over and over in every boss encounter. It's the same boss that iterates its skill set. So you're learning new patterns each time.
And
it definitely provides a good old fashioned jumpy shooty challenge in terms of memorizing patterns.
Yeah, yeah.
2D game. It's just, it lacks a certain inventiveness as well. And they could make the argument that, like, well, we're doing a kind of a Metroid 2 thing where it was a Metroid that you fought every boss, but it changed a little bit every time. Yeah. But it's even more basic than that. It's the same sprite every time, just recolored. It's, I don't want to say it's lazy, but it's definitely a school of design thought that is the path of least resistance. So...
That's a way of saying lazy. I'm sorry. I hate to tell you.
I don't feel comfortable throwing out the L word.
I'm sure they worked very hard to be lazy making this game.
That said, it's a good game. Yeah. And considering that for many people now, the access to it is very, very low.
Yeah. If I had this free on a Vita, I would play it immediately.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm playing that, and speaking of free, I am playing Pac-Man 256.
I played a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I never played that one. It's all right.
That is the new Pac-Man game from the makers of Crossy Road, which was, you know...
Frogger.
Unofficial Frogger. And this is an official Pac-Man.
Yes.
And, you know, in terms of the ways that newfangled Pac-Man games go, it's pretty cool. It's really fun. It's a lot like Crossy Road. Gameplay is
Missing some of the charm of Crossy Road.
It's missing a little of the charm of Crossy Road, but it's got its own Pac-Man-y charm to make up for that,
Can I ask what the 256 means?
So the 256 refers to the kill screen in Pac-Man, which was screen 256, at which the game would lock up. And fill with garbage graphics because it wasn't programmed to go any higher than that.
It ran out of memory or something.
Yeah. So the conceit in this game is that it is a...
The kill screen is chasing you.
The kill screen is chasing you because just like Crossy Road, it's sort of a slowly forced scrolling...
Three quarters
view. You must progress. And if you lag behind, the garbage graphics that you figure will catch up and kill you.
God, that's terrifying.
Worse than death.
There's some power-ups. There's, like, temporary lasers and bombs and things that you can... That sounds dumb to add that shit to Pac-Man, but I really like how they're applied in this context, actually. And in the same way that I liked how Crossy Road approached its free-to-play model, it's ad-supported. So... You can choose to watch a video, which will, like, get you... You can just watch an advertiser's video for 30 seconds, which will earn you points toward unlocking new weapons or some more credits so that you can pick up where you leave off when you die. But you don't have to do any of that. And if you don't do any of that, it doesn't feel like you're losing out. You just, like, okay, I'll play again a little bit later. It's no big deal. So it's... I think it's a fairer free-to-play balance than the sort of forcing it down to the, hey, if you pony up 99 cents, you can do this.
Right.
I like it. I like those guys. I guess they have a relationship with Apple now because they were on stage presenting a fancy new version of Crossy Road for the new Apple TV that you can play on your TV, and it's multiplayer.
I know I'm flippant because, I'm not into iOS, and two, I hadn't heard of Crossy Roads until now, and in my head it's Frogger.
Yes.
Which, you know, I'm sure there's a little more to it, but...
I mean, it's a Frogger Endless Runner. It has a cool visual style. It's all voxels and...
It is the way Frogger should be updated, and it took a third party, you know, unlicensed doing it to do it properly, which is why it's no surprise that Namco should tap them to officially make a similar update to Pac-Man. If Konami, you know, cared at all.
Just Namco holding a gun to their fucking head and being like, all right, you're going to make some money for us now, guys. we'll let this Crossy Road thing slide.
Yeah. Well, no, like, Konami should totally have pulled a Mrs. Pac-Man and been like, hey, can we buy this game from you and just call it Frogger?
I know there's a weird tangent, and I could be wrong. Someone's doing a really weird Galaga update. Fuck, I gotta look. I thought it looked amazing. Like, I was just like, I really want to play that.
Yeah, game. I remember Whatever that. It was. I don't remember what it's called.
Okay, I gotta look at it.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
I think that's it. Yeah. That and Julia Page has wanted to play some Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. So, which iteration? How'd you feel about that damn level?
Turtles in Time. Okay. We sat down and played.
Are you not making her play Hyperstone Heist?
No, it just didn't happen to be available. That's what I played.
Cool.
Me?
Yeah, sure.
Steve, I don't think you have anything at this point. I was just... Unless you've been sneakily playing games or just stuff in your room, because I don't see you do any living room gaming at this point. I think we just watch the same shit.
No, I watch a lot of, weird YouTube videos.
Mm. Yeah. Why are you so old?
I adventure around a couple of websites, and that's about it.
Well, where to start? I guess...
Searching for signal.
All right. Searching for signal. Yeah, well, what I put the most time into, as Steve mentioned, was Hateful Boyfriend, which has so much more to it than I ever expected when I started that game.
So what is this game? Is that how it's pronounced? Is it Hateful Boyfriend? Or is it Hateful Boyfriend?
It's, they never actually... Well, there's no voice acting.
Okay.
So it's all... See, it's a visual novel, what it is. And what it starts out as a dating sim, and you could beat this game several times and not really scratch the surface.
And aren't all the characters pigeons?
All the characters are pigeons except for you. You are a human.
Oh, okay.
You are a human going to this all-pigeon school called St. Pigeonations. And there's, various archetypical kind of Japanese schoolboy kind of characters. But things are kind of weird. And...
Yeah?
Well...
aside from pigeons.
Like, one of the first things I said is I think this game would be... This game would totally work if they weren't pigeons. Except for, eventually it works into the story. And there's a huge story. Like, as I said, I put 15 hours in. And it's basically, most of that came from... unlocking, the real story, the long ending, which is, so much longer than the rest of the game. Once you have beaten, five or six, it plays like a dating sim, so you're going to gear towards wanting to date one character or another character, and everything's cutesy, it's cutesy music, but things have this kind of, darkness underneath them. There's all these kind of illusions that the school nurse is kind of doing experiments, and you've got, it's weird because I don't want to give shit away. But basically, it ends up playing a lot more like 999 by the end.
Alright.
Kind of thing. It's not saying, your choices really, matter a ton. There is, gameplay-wise, it's a cover to tell a funny story. And a funny slash interesting story. But I'm just saying, there is a lot of satisfaction going from, okay, I'm enjoying the way that this game is written. And then I'm okay, I want to see some more endings. To going, now I really want to find out what's going on at the school. And just, is... I really don't want to spoil things, but it's totally worth the cheap entry fee to get into that game if you're into that style of game and that kind of, some asshole.
Yeah, they do not pass zone. It's quite dangerous.
It's a good thing he's stuck behind that semi now.
I know, yeah. How is this going to go?
I haven't played enough to really comment on the game yet, but that kind of led me to pick up what I've wanted to pick up for a long time, which is the Miles Edgeworth game.
Yeah.
Which, so far is cool.
Cool.
I have kind of toyed with a lot of different stuff testing out, on previous PSN sales. I don't remember all of the ones I tried, but I do want to talk about Klonoa.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to boot that up and give that a try.
One, I want to try, my thing is, I think at this point, a lot of the PSP games, I kind of want to wait for Vita.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, when I upgrade just for the screen size. Like, my note for Klonoa was just kind of like, I love the level design, and I want to strangle everything. Like, it is too cutesy for me. Aww. Like, the mascot... Like, I still want to, like, get back to... I think I can get past the cutesy. I think my main gameplay problem is the short-range attack and the weird... the way the double jump works.
Yeah.
Because the double
jump... It does have a weird double jump.
Yeah. And, like, I need some more time to acclimate myself to it, because the way your double jump works is you have to capture a character with your short-range attack. So you have to get near enough to them to use your magic ring or whatever.
Yeah, to grab them.
You grab them, and then they're kind of in a bubble, so they float you up, and then you do, like, a tiny hop off of that, and you do kind of a double jump off of that. And that didn't feel, like, great to me. However, I was really impressed by that fucking level design. Like, thinking that that was a PS1 game, like, that's beautiful. Like, for a 3D platformer of the time. So, I definitely want to get back to it. I don't know if I'm going to touch it for a little bit now. Mm-hmm. Also played a little Gradius, too, since I got that Gradius collection. Yeah. That game's awesome.
That game's awesome.
I also put a lot of time, and I've got to get back to it, but... so I saw the teaser trailer for what I had not heard of, but the internet knew this game, which is...
Oh, Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam.
Yes.
Gaiden.
Gaiden. Well, I saw the teaser for 2.
Yeah.
And that trailer looks amazing. Like, they just ran a Kickstarter in that game. But the first game, the writing in this game is hysterical. It does exactly, like, especially the kind of shit that we were kind of ripping on a lot, like... early college, late college, which is just, like, taking a silly idea and making it as, like, serious with a huge mythology as possible. So the whole thing is, like...
Yeah.
It's basically Space Jam, except for, like years in the future after the great B-ball incident where it destroyed the world. Michael Jordan is, like, this fucking turncoat Nazi traitor that's, like, turned on the B-ballers and is, like, coat and hat, and a lot of like one, the writing is like deadly, like Charles Barkley is just very seriously trying to protect his son, like, and trying
to quarter
uncover.
Mile, keep right at the fork, follow signs for US 220 South I-99 South,
just uncover mysteries and shit, and it plays like a turn-based RPG with silly moves and silly names and such, and a lot of the charm in the first game comes from it obviously being like
keep right
labor.
At the fork.
A labor of love with, like, I think it's, I don't actually know who it is, but I think it's Scottie Pippen, but, like, it's a character that's supposed to be disguised.
US 220 South for a half mile.
But all it has is, like, in his avatar is, like, a slightly cloaked veil. Like, you can still see his face from NBA Jam underneath it. But it's
just... 4 miles, merge onto I-99 South.
The actual RPG mechanics are a little frustrating because it's so, you know, one person making the game kind of thing.
Yeah.
I kind of got locked in an area. Like, once I can buy some more shit, I think I'll be all right. But for actually, like, setting up a mood and just, like, starting this game with its...
Continue on I-99 South for 52 miles.
There we go.
God, I hate that.
We will be uninterrupted for the next 52 miles.
Just, like, with its silly voice narration and it going into the song from NBA, or from Space Jam, like, right in the intro. Like, it sets a great tone. And the first game's free. So, I mean, I just went on check that shit. So, that's totally worth tracking down and checking out. I'm sure I tested some other shit, but I can't think of anything else, so blah, blah, blah.
Oh, Charles Barkley, shut up and jam.
That's hysterical. So, I will... But the second game is, like, the first game is turn-based, the second one is an action RPG, and it's taking a lot more from, like, Secret of Evermore.
Has money behind it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is it looks like really, like, fun gameplay.
Yeah.
Like, so, I'll be keeping an eye for that shit.
Are they doing anything? I mean, like, once you start charging people money, then you have to worry about, like,
Charles Barkley?
People's likenesses.
Well, here's the thing, is it's...
You've always got to worry about Charles.
It's not called Charles Barkley. It's called Barkley Shut Up and Jam, and this is the Hoops Barkley saga, because his son is named
right.
Hoops.
Yes, right.
With a Z. So this whole story is about Hoops.
Right.
So I'm guessing, like, all the licensed characters that were in the first one might be a little more parody in the second one. Yeah. But I'm not sure.
Oh my god, get out of this lane.
Yes. We're not linking into movies or anything.
Not yet, no. So,
yeah,
I got M2's latest and greatest Sega 3D classics release, that being 3D Gunstar Heroes.
Yeah.
Which looks awesome and plays awesome. There's no slowdown. Consistent frame rate. 3D looks great. It has a mode. They added a mode.
It has a mode!
It has a mode. They added a mode where... regular Gunstar Heroes, when you start a game, you pick your base weapon and you pick whether you're going to have a... whether you can stand still and aim your gun.
Oh, yeah, or move.
Or whether you move and shoot.
Yeah.
And if you pick the new mode, you can switch between all the different weapons on the fly and switch between the stances on the fly.
Ooh, that's cool.
So yes, it takes some challenge out of the game when you can just kind of grab whatever weapon you need for the situation, but
it sounds fun.
It's super fucking fun, yeah. So, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, if you want it the way it was, that's fine, but...
And it's still there. I mean, like, that's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just looks awesome. It's just, like, another great, 3DS treatment by M2.
Yep.
Like...
I started reading their developer blog for that, and it got really dense, really.
Yes,
quick.
It did. Mm. They had a lot of stuff to talk about. Their dev blogs are great reads. It's very intense game design, game theory stuff. But yeah, that's great. It's $6. There will be a sale at which point they'll probably all be $3. You should just buy every one of them.
Yeah.
Really, I'll probably be buying so many more. It's just like they do such a good job. Like even the games that I might not be interested in otherwise, I feel like I should check out just to see what they did to them.
Yeah.
Just the craftsmanship is worth, like, the $3 entry fee to me.
No, now that I bought the physical Shovel Knight, like, the money I have, like, sitting on my 3DS is pretty much prime for M2.
Yeah. So, it's been a while since we recorded, because the last episode we did was, like, beginning of August, maybe even end of July, and I just finished Witcher 3. Finally, after like 2 months.
And you'll never play a long video game.
No, never again. But the weekend after I finished The Witcher 3, I played Grow Home.
Oh, nice.
Which I beat in less than a day, because that is a much smaller game.
Yeah.
But that game is super fun. That game is great. That game is normally $8. This is a game from Ubisoft. This is one of their little cheapo indie-style games that they've been kind of tossing out. Once or twice a year.
I'm excited to play it.
Yeah, and it feels kind of like a higher resolution PlayStation 1 game, and then like the polygons in the environment, the character models are all very simple. It has very simple game mechanics in that you're this robot that's dropped off from atmosphere to this planet to grow this star plant so that it will sprout a seed which you can then send back to your planet to use for energy. So your job is to help this plant grow by you climb up the plant and you use your left trigger for your left hand and your right trigger for your left hand. When you hold it down, you're grabbing on, so you're kind of like huff, up the side of this thing. And eventually you get like a little rocket boost pack that helps out, and there's a couple different items you can pick up to help you maneuver around. So, like, you'll grab onto these seeds on the side of the plant, and then you will guide them out to, and you have to jam them into these rocks that are full of energy, and that will help make the plant grow. So, that's the whole game, really, is just making this plant grow. And it's really relaxing. You can die if you fall from a height, which will happen, or if you get stuck in water too long, but it's not, it's a very easygoing game.
Nice.
It feels a little bit like Katamari to me, in that you're growing this plant, and, at first, like, oh man, I've made this plant very large, and then eventually, like, you're up in the atmosphere surrounded by just debris floating, and you're like, man, this plant is fucking huge, and if you jump off, you will free fall straight down, like, past all the stuff you did. But it's also neat because you, it's, you know, when you are directing those vines around, you're basically creating the world that you're going to be climbing around and jumping around on. So there, yeah, there's this element of you, like, the main stalk of the plant grows in a preset way that kind of goes past these islands and whatnot. But all the other branches of it, that's all, like, however you guide them.
That's all you dog.
And you can guide them all over the fucking place. And, like, to get to some of the plants, you'll have to, like, go out in multiple stalks at different angles.
So you don't have anybody to blame but yourself. If you, it gets really hard.
I guess. I mean, I can't imagine that you can fuck yourself that bad with it. But
is this game on PlayStation Plus this month?
It is on PlayStation Plus this month. Yep.
That was another one that I was just like, man, I should get Plus.
Okay. Yeah, it was voted in by the fans.
And there's
a side objective. There's 100 crystals to collect that make a nice little shimmery sound whenever you're near one. So, you know, it makes hunting, that's a nice side collecting thing to do. But, I mean, like, the whole thing's going to take you like 5 hours to play, so... Yeah.
No, that's perfect. I will be getting this game.
It is a nice weekend game that is very relaxing and fun to play.
Now, that is exactly the type of game I kind of look for, I think, at this point.
That's not all rehabs are cool.
Nope. That guy is happy.
Not fucking rehab competition out here in Pennsylvania.
You thought that rehab was good. Jeez. These results.
That was a Steam sale get for me back in June, and I started up another Steam sale get, which was Dark Souls 2 Scholar of the First Sin, which was the updated and re-released package that they put out in a convoluted way on PC, but was basically kind of the PS4 Xbox One HD remake version, which included all the DLC,
Game of the Year edition,
and some new stuff. Yeah, more or less. And I only played through Dark Souls 2 once, and I missed out on Bloodborne, so I've kind of had a hankering.
You didn't miss out on it, you just haven't played it.
I am missing out. I have been missing out on Bloodborne. It was funny, because I'm like, oh, I need something to save me. I started playing this game, I'm just like, fuck, I want to play Bloodborne.
Yeah, right.
So it just made it worse for like a little while. There's three big new areas in this, and I only just found the first one, because they don't tell you where they are. It's fucking Dark Souls. And
right.
When you were buying them a la carte, it would drop the item you need to access them right into your inventory, so you could just go there and access the content. But here, it's like, you have to find the item that unlocks the area and then get in there. But Dark Souls 2 is still... kind of has problems with, or I still have problems with, like, its level design and it kind of being a little bit dull in its overall world design. They've changed things up in that they've rearranged enemy placements, so there's plenty of surprises for me. I'm going with a more fun build, I think, this time around. Before, I was kind of a heavy armor quality build with my helmet, so I hide behind my giant ass shield with my big ass armor, which is always how I start Souls games. It's like, as armored as fucking possible. I'm just like a total pussy.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm out there to kill you.
Yeah, I live in terror, even though,
poke, poke, poke.
You know, the way to not die in Dark Souls is to be good at dodging and just never to get hit.
Like, yeah, but you gotta know what to dodge.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm playing a hex and dex build, which is hex magic and high dexterity, so...
A hexadecimal.
So I got magic, and I got some, you know, quick, and I got some good attacks, and it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
But, and it runs fucking great on my PC, like 60 frames per second. It looks fantastic.
I wonder how Fallout 4 is going to play, because I'm waiting for, like, a game that, like, my system doesn't like yet, because my PC is still pretty new.
Yeah.
It should be fine.
It should be fine.
I tell you what, did you mention Phantom Pain at all yet?
Not yet.
I'm kind of intensely curious to see any reviews of the 360 PS3 versions of that game.
Right.
Because I was surprised that, you know, when Mortal Kombat 10 was recently canceled, for 360 PS3, and they were like, yeah, we could not get it running satisfactorily on those, you know, the way that we... I'm like, it's a one-on-one fighting game. It's not all that different from Mortal Kombat 9. So, you know, what's... So, I gotta wonder, like, what is... And I've heard that it's not much of a difference.
That's what I've heard, too. I think it's just, like, better resolutions on the new console. I mean, like, the frames on that are capped at 30, okay. I believe. Anyways, Dark Souls 2 is not capped at 30. It's a buttery 60 frames per second. It looks really nice, but, yeah, that first DLC area is, like, better than any other area in the main game so far. In terms of its construction and enemies and ideas and everything. So that's where I am right now, being fucking pissed off and how fucking hard it is. But then, yeah, I stopped because I ended up buying the Phantom Pain. Metal Gear Solid 5. The Phantom Pain.
5.
Which we've already talked about a bit on this car ride.
Yeah.
But,
it's hard not to.
Yeah, for the benefit of you listeners at home, I just basically decided to buy it because it's been getting very good word of mouth, like, very good reviews, and it was kind of the game that I wanted to play. And I had a really shitty fucking week, so I wanted to buy something.
It's all your fucking
fault. Retail therapy. Yeah. Retail therapy, girlfriend.
Absolutely. So yeah, and the way my apprehensions going into this game were that, you know, the story wrapped quite satisfactorily to my
most
people's desires with Metal Gear Solid 4. And, you know, he went on to do Peace Walker, and it was like, okay, well, that's on PSP, so who fuck cares? And whatever. But the story's wrapped up, so it's like, why are you coming back to this? And my feeling, at least thus far, is that he didn't necessarily have a story to tell, but he had a game that he wanted to make, that Coach Hideo wanted to make,
Konami doesn't want you to know made.
Yeah, even though his name is all over in the game once you're playing it. Oh, yeah.
Thank God.
Well, like, every mission opens and closes with credits, and his name is in the credits every time. Like, you never forget that Hideo Kojima made this game.
That's...
every mission?
Every main mission, yeah.
Wow.
Has, like, a quick little credit sequence. It's to cover the loading. Basically, from what I've surmised, yeah. But, yeah, so, like, he basically, you know, you can see a lot in playing the first 12 hours of this game. Like, how he's drawing from concepts that he started playing around with in Snake Eater, and then Guns of the Patriots, and then Peace Walker. And now it's all rolled up into this, like, ultimate open world Metal Gear gameplay experience.
And that, within this, the latest Giant Bomb podcast that we both listened to, what struck me is when, I think, Brad asked the room, so, gameplay-wise, best Metal Gear Solid yet, right? And they were all like, oh yeah, gameplay, absolutely. Not only that, maybe the best sandbox game I've ever played. Definitely, like, best video game, top 10, like, video game I've played in recent memory. I mean, they're just...
Yeah, they were gushing.
They were gushing.
Gushing
on especially them. About a Japanese-developed sandbox-style adventure game. And the things that they're describing are things that I feel like I've heard people gush about GTA in the past. The sort of very emergent gameplay that you can tackle a problem any way you want, and more often than not, your own creative solutions will work. That the very best of sandbox gameplay... That's what it sounds like this game is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
and that's, like, the crazy thing is, like, I wouldn't, like, come out and say, like, this game is better than Snake Eater. But because, like, the story of Snake Eater is such a strong part of that game, and there is far less story in Phantom Pain than there is in any other Metal Gear game, like, by a large margin...
Beautiful thing is you don't really need to compare them. Like, they're so different. Like, I know a lot of people are, like, ranking their Metal Gears right now, and I'm just like, I don't think that's even necessary, because it's... I mean, it is a Metal Gear game, but it's so fucking different.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but gameplay-wise, I'm like, yeah, this is probably easily better than any other Metal Gear game, and that it takes... That all the craziness that, like, our... you know, specific group of people experience playing through Snake Eater, where you know, each had our different styles, and there was just so much different stuff to try and talk about and mess around with. Like, there's all that, but with kind of the more refined gameplay of Guns the Patriots, along with other refinements and more open-world crazy shit to just let you go fucking bananas.
No, I'm really looking forward to this game.
Yeah, it's really, really good. But yeah, and you should probably play Ground Zeroes first just to kind of get the setup. Yeah. It feels like that might have been chopped off of this game to get something out there so Konami could, like, make some money back on this investment that, you know, has been working on for years and years. And
I don't like YouTubing, but would it be worth YouTubing the story of Ground Zero?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
you're not really going to miss out on anything gameplay-wise.
That's the thing, because I'm not really, like, psyched for Ground Zeroes, and I don't want it to be like, all right, I'll do my homework before I can go out and play.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think like, Phantom Pain, like, introduces the concepts that are in Ground Zeroes a lot smoother. Because I remember, like, going into Ground Zeroes and just being kind of fucking confused as to what I was supposed to be doing and, like, how it all worked, because it is pretty different. Like, kind of the routine in Phantom Pain is, you know, you will have an objective that is in a guarded area, and you're probably going to want to get, like, a nice overlook of that area, and you start looking over it with your binoculars, and as you zoom in on, like, enemies and weapon placements, it's going to mark those on your map so you know where they are. Yeah, and that's, like, the first thing you're going to do to kind of check the whole thing out, and then you kind of figure out your plan of attack and go in there, and the markers will still be, like, moving around, but of course there will probably be some guys that you miss, so you got to stay on your toes. And then you'll go in and do your shit, and you're going to try to be sneaky. But sometimes missions just go to shit. And then everybody dies.
Tell me I'm going to be sneaky.
You are going to... It feels good to be sneaky. There was this one mission I did. Because I have to have give an example of a one mission I did. I don't really have any too hilarious stories yet. It's been fun. I don't have anything that was, like, particularly hysterical. But I had this one mission where you just have to go in to this base, identify these satellite dishes, which are obvious because they're on top of the fucking buildings, and then you have to go in and blow them up. And so I go in, and I identify them, and I'm like, shit, I don't have anything to blow them up with. So I sneak back out of the base, get a supply drop in the mission of C4, take the C4, sneak back into the base, I do the first two. You know, I haven't set them off yet, because I'm going to set them off, like, all at once. And I'm sitting there, like, looking over this ridge, and it, like, there's all this floodlights around, and I have to get on top of this building over there. I'm like, how the fuck am I going to get over there? And then a sandstorm rolls through. So I'm just like, oh, this is perfect, because sandstorm, like, kills the visibility for enemies and you. So I just, like, snuck across in the sandstorm, dropped the C4, ran out, and then just, like, blew everything up in the middle of the sandstorm, got away scot-free, just like, whatever, and it felt really cool.
I would totally Fury Road any kind of, like, giant sandstorm. Like, give me a truck, I'm gonna play the music.
There are trucks.
Oh, yeah.
You can play...
And I can play my own music,
yes,
so...
Yes, on the PC version, you can load in custom soundtracks and then play them in your cassette player or cue them to your helicopter's entrance.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
I can't wait.
Just the fact that, like, he's like, well, we have to put a loudspeaker on there so that they can play music when the helicopter comes in. Like, knowing that was important, and that is... It's great
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, all... You know, wrestling entrance themes work beautifully.
Right.
I've been using the old Evolution theme songs a lot. But yeah, you're like, you can throw anything. I use the credits music from Mighty Switch Force 2, Rescue Girl.
That's a
good one. The first thing I did is I put the character select from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. So the helicopter showed up to take me for a ride.
I don't know if I would want to, like, break the thematic 80s.
No, you don't.
Yeah, because that's what I really want to, like, be immersed in.
Yeah, like, so not everything.
Airwolf theme, come on.
Yeah, I've been playing around with different things to see what, like, really fits and works.
Yeah.
But it was definitely funny for the first thing. I'm just standing in my base, and I just hear, gonna take you for a ride. zooming in to pick me up. I was like, okay.
How do they equalize it through the game? Well,
like, oh, it echoes.
So,
yeah,
so it echoes.
Yeah,
and it.
And
so,
yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I heard, was it Dan Reichert or was it the other guy who related the story of how he did not, he could not hear Quiet's backstory revealed because the chopper landed right next to her prison cell and would continue to play, the music continued to play over, like, the cutscene voice acting.
Yeah. Yeah, so I, but
that's a little weird.
To contrast that sneaky quiet mission, I had a mission where
sneaky
I was
going
to
be mission.
mission that I pulled off sneaky quiet. There was another mission where I was doing some, work for a local guerrilla group, and this this is taking place in Afghanistan during the, like, the Soviet invasion, like the 80s thing that helped the Taliban come to power. And
we know the illusion.
So so, like, your job is to ride around and try to blow up all this armored all these armored trucks that are driving around. And, you know, this is a mission that could happen stealthily, but you're shooting rockets in fucking trucks. People are going to notice you.
Yeah.
But that was, no pun intended, but that mission was a freaking blast.
Can you carry a boombox?
Well, I mean, you can turn on the speaker on your Walkman. Just stand in the middle of the road holding the
that's what I'm picturing.
Your head.
Left hand with a boombox, right hand with a bazooka.
Yeah.
How cool would that be?
Yeah, but it's... So, I'm on the horse, you know, I run, and I shoot rockets the first... Or I cut it off, like, drop C4 on the road, blow it up, throwing grenades at him, shooting rockets. Then, like, another one, or, like, a four-wheel drive Jeep comes, you know, somewhere on the map that has a prisoner on. So, I ride my horse over there, ride it up behind the Jeep, shoot out the driver and the passenger, jump over there, you know, save that guy... And then, like, another truck is coming through with a big missile launcher on it. So I go stop that truck, take the missile launcher, go shoot out the last two, and just, like, running, riding all over the place on my fucking horse, blowing shit up.
Nice.
That was not a sneaky quiet mission. It was a lot of explosions blowing stuff up. And they give
See, that's what I need to hear. It's like, that's what I was saying. Yeah. It's like, for guys like me, when everyone's just like, this is the best stealth game, I'm just like, yeah, but what about is it the best not stealth game?
Like, yeah, like, they give you so many guns to kill the shit out of guys with.
Colonel, but what's like, this what mission sneaky quiet
is they can be
loud.
You know, in past
rated BL for Booby Loud.
In past Metal Gears, you know, they would give you the Trank gun. You get the Trank gun, you get the Trank sniper, you have Tranks. Well, this, if you still want to be non-lethal, they gave you rubber bullet guns.
Yeah.
So I have a non-lethal submachine gun and assault rifle right now.
Right.
So I can still be, be non-lethal if I want to. And you do lose a bit of honor with your troops if you go out there murdering guys.
Sure.
only a little bit, though.
What if they didn't see it?
They know, somehow.
You go back and tell them?
It's got the Peace Walker mechanic, right? Where you're building bases.
Yes, you are. Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, you're recruiting guys. That's the thing. Like, you know, in other Metal Gear, it's like, oh, I'm going to knock a guy out. I need to hide the body. In this, you knock a guy out, and you tie them to a balloon, and they zip back to your base to be turned to work for you.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And just,
it's
like,
awesome because I don't have to worry about hiding them.
Yeah, that's what you do to everybody. Just fold them, just boom, balloons out. Yeah. Bye, there they go.
So wait a minute, how does a balloon go sideways then?
Maybe
it's
what?
Tied? Well, you can't just tie a balloon and he'll eventually drift to your base.
No,
yes.
You do, yeah.
How does
you,
it?
Even
how
if
does
they have
the
to
balloon,
circle the globe,
there's a percentage
times.
It could fail. No, I think like it fultons them out, but then your support, you have a support team eventually, and they are the ones that are picking up the things you're fultoning. They're not going back to your base in the Indian Ocean.
There's a string attached to it or a big fan?
There is a bit of grounding to you tying balloons to everything and them zipping off into the atmosphere. It's realistic,
Steve. Yeah. Come on.
Oh.
I don't know if this actually happened in Desert Storm or whatever.
Coach.
Yeah, it's super fun, and I'm not even really that far yet. The only buddy I have is D-Horse. I haven't gotten Quiet, I haven't gotten D-Dog. Or anything else. So there's a lot to play around with. in this game. And it just, like, the more you go, the more stuff you get to fuck around with, and it just supposedly just gets better and better as you go.
When they were describing using D-Dog and Quiet on the podcast, I couldn't tell if actually gameplay-wise they functioned more like menu-driven commands, or if it's like a squad-based thing where you're walking around in third person and you can, like, deploy them via the D-pad to
it's that. They're like, when
they're there walking, trailing behind you.
They would be there with you, yeah. Okay. I mean, I think when you send Quiet to do something, she goes off to do it, you know.
Right.
But, you know, D-Dog can run around with you and sick him on things. From what I've heard, obviously, D-Horse, you ride the damn horse. Riding around on a horse, shooting rockets at armored vehicles.
How's the horse look? How does it move?
The horse is
How's
weird.
How's the horse look?
I mean, it's weird.
The horse mechanics?
Because the horse can, like...
Is it one-to-one, or is it, No, this is important. Is the control...
It's not like...
Do you control the horse, or do you control the reins?
It's not like Shadow of the Colossus, Weeks. It's not like Shadow of the Colossus.
Is it Red Dead, or...
It's weird because, like, he can go up and down slopes that a horse should not be able to go up and down.
Oh, nice.
You can jump off the cliffs, and you're fucking fine. It's like, God, poor horse, your legs should be broken. My God, are you all right?
Just abandon him last minute, like Yoshi.
You could do that.
Jump!
Yeah, there's a real...
Well, I did that a lot.
Goodbye. Obviously, this game has horse stealth, which is super useful when you're going by a base and you just want to, like, kind of ride by it. You know, you just slip over the side of the horse. The people at the base just see a fully saddled horse with a leg hanging over the top of it that's totally not suspicious.
Oh, it's the guy! The guy riding that horse totally got blown up. All that's left of is his leg.
Yeah, that poor bastard. Yeah, so it's a blast. Not so much of the story so much yet.
Yeah.
Snake is not very chatty in this because they decided to pay a Hollywood actor to voice Snake.
Instead of a Hollywood writer.
Yeah, which I feel is just Kojima being like, I have this money, I want to work with Kiefer Sutherland.
Probably was.
That's why would you switch from David Hayter for the last game? Though I think in Japan it's still the same voice actor. In Japanese,
right?
Yeah. So we have this one outlier because he wanted to stroke his ego. So Kojima.
Hey, we don't know if that was Hayter doing something stupid.
Yeah, maybe. Kind of doubted, though.
I don't know. Yeah. I did remember that I,
excuse me.
I don't think I mentioned on the last podcast that I played the third of the Tales from the Borderlands games.
I think you were about to. I think you said, like, it just came out.
Oh, okay. It's really good. I really like that series. I don't really have, like, too much to add. Like, Loaderbot is one of my favorite characters this year, so... if we do a character of the year, that's the only one I'm thinking of right now. I'm waiting for the announced date of the last one, and then once they announce that date, I'll play the fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
So at least that'll spread it out a little better. But man, Telltale is still really good.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, like, I know they're kind of off the radar a little bit right now because
they have so much stuff that they're kind of
they've spread thin.
Yeah.
Well, especially because a lot of people aren't in love with the Game of Thrones adaptation right now. And even though I think it'll be a good game, people are kind of, like, giving an eyebrow to the Minecraft game because, you know, it's a story-driven Minecraft game.
Yeah.
But it's starring Patton Oswalt, and it's Telltale, so I'll buy it. But,
did you catch the Humble Store's end of summer sale?
Yeah, there was... I had most of...
The Telltale.
All the stuff I wanted. Yeah.
The way they're doing bundles with individual developers.
Yeah,
is
I came
deceptive.
Close on Devolver Digital.
I bit on Devolver.
Oh, you did?
Because I got, five games for, like, $6.
Yeah. There were two I wanted, and I couldn't find a third, unfortunately.
When I got to the point, I had added four games to my basket, and then you get an additional discount for adding a fifth. And
right.
I got to where, like, I added that fifth game, and my total cost actually went down. Like, it was cheaper to buy more games than it was to buy fewer games.
Maybe I should have dicked around with that a little more.
Well, I was like, holy shit, I should...
Dog does sales like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Not a Hero was the one I really wanted. Like, there was something I was like, yeah, that could be fun or that could be fun, but it was just like, I just want Not a Hero.
Well, I got Ronin because you told me about Ronin.
Oh,
right?
yeah. That looked, like, to me, I still want to play Gunpoint more, because it's very similar, but Ronin was still pretty cool, so. And especially for the price, oh.
Yeah. It was insane.
Yeah. Well, that's it game-wise.
Yep, that's it.
Did you guys see any movies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I saw some movies.
Yeah, well, right. Remember, I have not talked about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You love him.
Not really. I mean, I don't dislike that movie, but it was just like, it was okay. It was alright.
I still want to see it.
Sure, why not? I mean, you might like it more than I did.
I don't know.
No, the problem is just, like, you know, I had high expectations, because I really like Mission Impossible 3, and I really like Ghost Protocol.
Yeah.
And this movie was just kind of like, okay. Like, it didn't really grab me that much. Like, the stakes involved, like, the villain.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, so he's, you know, he's running, stop me if you've heard this one, he's running this shadowy spy organization that has been lurking in the shadows all this time.
Yeah.
It's not Spectre, it's totally not Spectre. which sure felt a lot like that.
In the year of Spectre.
With a Bond trailer that played ahead of it for Spectre.
Right.
It is just like, you know, very suddenly... I mean, you have your opening scene where Ethan Hunt runs and jumps on the side of a plane, and it's Tom Cruise on the side of a plane.
Right,
Tom Cruise is fucking crazy. But you've seen that in all the trailers. But that happens. And then it's like, yeah, so there's this Rogue Nation, which I don't even remember what the hell they're called.
Swaziland.
Yeah, this underground, this shadowy organization that is doing sneaky spy stuff from the shadows. And, like, the whole plot ends up, you know, kind of revolving around trying to stop them from getting money so that they will stop, you know, to stop them from doing bad stuff. But you never really see the bad stuff that they do or, like, why they're bad or...
Told that they're bad.
You're being told that they're bad rather than being shown that they're bad. And it's really kind of key because there's, like, one scene where the head of said organization is just, like... Well, we're doing the same thing you do, just in a different way. And it's kind of like, yeah, basically, I mean, like, there's a very brief moment where, you know, Ethan is kind of on the run from the CIA and whatnot.
so the only way that you know
which
that
tangent, like, at the end of Ghost Protocol, like, I thought it was just kind of those four, like, were what was left of IMF. Because IMF was, like, disavowed.
Right.
And, like, it was just those four. But then, like, here we are, and here's, Jeremy Renner, like, in congressional hearings, talking about the IMF. It's like, what? 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 It seemed like it kind of went backwards. Ethan's kind of on the run, and, like, there's a moment where he's, like, you know, connecting dots. Like, oh, there was this thing that happened here, and this thing that happened here, and this thing that happened here. And it happens, like, really fast, but you're never, like, there to see, like, this organization... do something that they think is for the greater good that is clearly bad. Like, you never see that.
Uh-huh.
So it's just kind of like, okay. And I knew there was a problem where there's this big, long, like, you know, action scene in this opera house, and I realized, like, fuck, I am bored. I am bored right now watching this movie. This is bad. I don't want to be bored.
Right.
And kind of the big, like, infiltration scene, which I guess you kind of compare to, like, the outside of the building craziness from Ghost Protocol is, you know, him having to go into this, like, underwater chamber under this power plant to switch out a car key before Benji goes into a thing so he doesn't get killed.
And you're not going to beat Dubai. You have to go into this movie knowing.
But just, like, it didn't feel like there was any stakes to it. It was just like, okay, well, he's going to go down there and he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as visually impressive... Or like, the scene where, you know, he breaks into the Vatican. Like, that whole sequence was awesome.
Humpty-dumpty
sat on the wall.
There
is an awesome car chase after that break-in.
Yeah.
That is the best part of the movie. But then there's, like, the climax, and they kind of set up the stipulation that you can't shoot Ethan because he has this information in his head. And then they're just all shooting at him all willy-nilly. Like, even the main villain, it's like, what? Wait, you just said... Like, and it's just, you know, kind of a chase through the streets of Paris, and it's kind of like, okay. It just...
Yeah.
The car chase was good, but the other action sequences weren't that good. The plot wasn't that great. And it's kind of a bummer, because, you know, they...
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ving Rhames back for the whole thing, so it's kind of like the Mission Impossible dream team coming together.
I read an interesting, like, you know, obviously we disagree with this, but a critic I like was just kind of talking about Abrams and brought up Mission Impossible 3 and something that rubbed him and some people wrong, like, with that movie at the time was just, like, and probably because they knew Abrams a lot more from, like, Lost.
Yeah.
And kind of coming in from that, but just, like, the way he'll rub his, like, the way he wants to play with conventions in your face, i.e., the whole naming the MacGuffin device, the MacGuffin device.
Right, right.
And he was talking a lot about just, like, the whole idea of, yeah, exactly, like, making the movie a little too just on the nose for some people and not getting kind of the joke, whereas I think, like, that joke worked just enough for us.
Yeah.
Like, in a sense, where it's just like, if it was a little more, we probably would have been a little turned off, but as it was, came off as really funny.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting kind of turn of perspective.
Yes.
On that movie.
I forgot that I also watched for the first time Mission Impossible 2.
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah, I still want to.
That movie feels like a direct-to-video parody of a Mission Impossible movie. With someone trying desperately to style themselves after John Woo, except it's actually directed by John Woo and actually stars Tom Cruise and is actually Mission Impossible 2.
That's what that era of John Woo is. That's what pissed me off about, everything I saw except
it's
for...
It's so dumb! Yeah. It's like it is someone parodying John Woo, except it's actually John Woo. And just like, it's not good. It's just so weird. But it's not good. But the first movie still holds up. I also watched
that. I want to go back to.
I also rewatched that. And That movie is still pretty cool. Yeah. John Reno.
I'll transition to Man from U.N.C.L.E. I don't think I've talked about since.
Nope.
Man. Kind of the counter to Mission Impossible 5.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like... The movie isn't as good as its trailer. I'll say that. But I had a lot of fun with it. Because it's just fucking around. Like, I think that's the coolest thing the movie does. Like, it's very, very slick and it's very set in its 60s time period. Man from U.N.C.L.E. is Guy Ritchie's adaptation of the 60s spy TV show. It took some liberties with the backstory because our generation hasn't really grown up with Man from U.N.C.L.E., so they're not going to bitch about it, pretty much. Which I had to kind of read about. Like, I had seen Scattered Man from U.N.C.L.E., and actually, going back to the pilot, that's a really good show, actually. Oh. I think you'd really like it.
Cool.
It's just, like, one of the best soundtracks this year. It's just phenomenal. But, it's Henry Cavill and, Army, Lone Ranger.
Okay.
So, it's Superman and Lone Ranger, basically. And it's... Like, one of the things that I was hoping for from the trailer and that I did get is that it brings out more personality in both of them than they've had in at least... In their Hollywood
rules,
yeah. Like, it's just, like, it gave them a great playground and gave them, like, fun characters to dick around with. Like, Lone Ranger, like, I was reading somebody else's where they were talking about no one really knows what to do with this guy because he's huge. And he's kind of goofy, and he was totally miscast in Lone Ranger. And, like, he's having a ton of fun with his silly Russian accent. Basically, like it's a little bit of an odd couple kind of thing. Like the best parts of the movie, like, there are some great action sequences, but kind of the deceptive thing, and I can see a lot of people being turned off, is that it's not really an action movie. Like, it's still just kind of a grounded, weird spy, like, the best stuff is the two spies fucking with each other. Like, the two best, like, scenes are all the action scenes that have to do with them sabotaging each other just for their egos. And just, like, one of the scenes is just, like, what would have been a great action sequence, except they let it off in the distance while another character watches, another character panics. And he's just sitting by doing his thing, fucking around. Like, I don't think this is
While an entire action sequence
is going.
Like, in the back of the shot?
Yep, pretty much. Like, it's really Guy Ritchie kind of, like, cock-teasing you in that sense. I think this... Like, it's a movie that's going to fall off a lot of people's radars. It's not, like... I don't think this is
something... Came out in August.
Yep. So, when it comes to direct video, I think it's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of good, like, flavor to just, like, kind of throw on randomly. Like, it definitely has a different feel than everything else, and I think it's cool in the year of all these spy movies that, you know, I think it goes really well with Kingsman, sort of in a way of...
I was about
throwback.
To say that, yeah.
Yeah.
I read a funny article recently that touched on this movie.
Mm-hmm.
This movie and the J.J. Star Trek reboot. The thesis of the article was like, I am so sick of reboots of 60s shows where they force conflict in between the main characters. They said because the part of the joy of the shows was that you were watching professionals at the top of their game.
Yeah,
Like, get along with each other and work really well together.
That's something that has annoyed me with Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
why are Kirk and Spock at each other's, you know, it's purely for the sake of generating this artificial sense of conflict because it's a short form, because it's only a 2-hour movie.
Well, like, the thing with Man from U.N.C.L.E. worked, I think, because there was a lot of Cold War analogies, too, because you've got the whole Russia-U.S. thing, and, I can't... The woman that played the AI in Ex Machina was the third agent in their mix, and she's also excellent.
Who is that?
It's Vic. It starts with a V. It's a name I can't remember. But either or, so, you know, everybody's kind of representing their country, and that's where, like, you know, it's not a deep thriller, but there are some turns, and it kind of, like, plays off of that. So at least it's contextual.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel, like, forced. And the movie's also, like, an origin story from, like, from when I was reading the TV series, the Russian character was just kind of a throw-in, and then everyone ended up loving it. So, like, they always kind of, like, spat it a little bit, like... Like, in the 60s...
Fun, casual insults to each other, right?
Well, like imagine in the 60s when we're, like... Like, imagine right now, like, in our... You know, a U.S. agent and an Iraqi agent.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something... Like, even imagine that, like, in the mid-90s. You know, like,
right.
When we're in the midst of it. You know, like, that kind of thing must have been really weird. So, like, this was basically setting up the team. And you also have, Hugh Grant... thrown in too, who was, you know, he only had a tiny bit part, but he was kind of reveling in his sappiness.
Yeah,
really.
That's I missed the I did not properly relay the thesis of the article. I remember.
Okay.
The article was arguing against telling origin stories. It was like, we don't need to see the bickering that got them to work together well.
Right.
The fun of the show is that they already worked together well. We already saw them at the point in their careers.
Yeah.
They were a perfectly oiled team.
And again, I totally agree on Star Trek, and I'll argue it for Man from U.N.C.L.E. because, like, the movie doesn't actually feel like an origin story until, like, it basically, like, ends with them forming the team.
Okay.
And you don't really, like, think about whether it's going... Because it doesn't feel like a franchise movie. It just...
Right.
You know, it's... Again, it's an August release. It's not something that they mean to be, like, a tentpole. It's not a Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So it's just like, oh, everybody is sort of on the same page. Okay, we are tying them together into a team kind of thing. But, you know, the whole... You weren't lured into this to be an origin story. It was just like, their story happened to be about these characters, and that's how we view it. So, I think it worked. Like, I do agree, I wish they would trust the audience in a lot of licensed pieces to just throw them in the middle, Batman cough, but Spider-Man cough, etc. But, yeah. For the most part, I agree with this one. I also watched a movie called Call Me Lucky, which is really, really good.
Oh,
this is a...
I saw you post about that.
Yeah, I really like this.
Is this the one that got an A+ on DrunkMonkeys.com from Weiss Cutler?
It did. It's a documentary from director Bobcat Goldthwait.
Ah.
Yeah, who has been doing a lot of kind of dark humor stuff. He's directed a lot of Marin. He's directed, like, a couple. He directed World's Greatest Dad, the Robin Williams movie.
Oh, yeah, that's
that was supposed to be really good. I didn't get to see that.
That was a good movie.
And what I really, like, the editing on this documentary was done really well. But it's a documentary about a comedian called Barry Crimmins, who was hugely influential in the 70s and 80s, but he was sort of in the vein of the Bill Hicks, Lenny Bruce, super outspoken, political kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he was not media-friendly whatsoever. And he basically fostered Boston comedy out of the 80s, so...
I watched the trailer for this after you posted it, and I was like, oh, wow, who the hell is this guy?
Right.
All these famous comedians are speaking so highly of.
And, like, he had this huge career, and, like, one of the things is the movie starts out, and it goes into that, and then it kind of, like, it feels like that usual documentary where it's like, oh, this guy's dead. He obviously did a ton of drugs, which he did, and had died off, and this is the post-mortem story, but then
in a half mile, continue on to U.S.
Hey, we've made it 52 miles since that last interruption.
But then it shows him out in the woods in his upstate New York home, chopping wood, alive, and you're like, oh, what's this story going to be about now? And it's, and it's one, like, he's still, it's not like the story is he's mellow now either. Like, he's still an angry guy, and he's started getting back
into... In 1.5 miles, take the U.S. 30 East exit toward Everett Breezewood.
Into doing comedy, but he's also, like, the movie takes a very personal turn about halfway. And what I really like isn't, you know, because it's a documentary, you're like, okay, this is about the time in a documentary where we do something, where we drop a bomb, and then we come back to the the rest of the movie is about that bomb and, like, how he's affected by it now. And it's, like, I know, it's very, like, sensitive and...
Well, the trailer was pretty clear about what it was about.
Right? Yeah, and I only don't want to say it because it didn't, like, I didn't know going in and it was, like, a nice kind of turn, but he's an advocate now, like, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like what kind of the thing is, although he did comedy and he still does comedy, he doesn't seem like a guy who is really
in a half mile, take the US 30 East exit toward Everett Breezewood.
Like, he's a speaker. Like, he's an orator.
Uh-huh.
And he has an agenda, and what he wants to do is change people's minds.
Yeah.
And he's really good at that. Like, even though he's, like, a gruff dude.
Take the U.S. 30 East exit.
It seems like what I got from the trailer was that rather than, or maybe in addition to comedy being therapy for a painful past, he has also literally
become an advocate. In a quarter mile, merge onto U.S. 30 East.
And,
no, it definitely, it has him going from comedy to, you know, leaving the stage, doing advocate stuff, basically, like, and eventually he comes up against Congress and is talking to Congress and, like, and that whole stuff is fucking brilliant. But, it's just, it's powerfully done and it never, like, feels sappy. Like, I think it does a really good job of tone and, like, kind of keeping you there and, like, getting the point across. So when this is eventually on your streaming service, or if, you know,
that's what I was going to ask, like, when?
Continue on U.S. 30 East for 17 miles.
Like, me and Ben, I bought it on VOD, and I just rented it on that. Because, to me, it's like, if I have a, you know, someone else in the room, automatically that's half the price of a movie. Like, even though I'm paying for somebody, generally, it's just kind of like, okay, $7.
Yeah, on a per person.
Yeah, for a movie that's, like, just out, maybe could use the support too. kind of thing, especially like a documentary that I don't get extra from a theater.
What did you rent it over?
I did Google.
Okay.
Because I usually do Amazon, except for whatever reason they wouldn't let me do HD. They only did the SD.
Okay.
And I'm just kind of like, it's the same price. What the fuck? I hear.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
They're both seven. They always kind of do that at this point. Okay. So I'm just like, well, I'm going to find another service since they have a million. I don't do iTunes because I hate iTunes. Okay. But
but presumably it's on everything.
It's on everything, yeah. Yeah, it made a big festival splash and all that shit.
No, that's cool to know because now I will seek it out probably and pay to rent it.
Yeah.
The kind of movie I would like to financially support rather than just wait for it to come to a streaming service.
Right. And as much as I talk about, like, the serious stuff, it is really cool for the comedy nerds, too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Especially, like, the early stuff. Like, you've got a lot of comedian stuff. Like, it's something I had heard on, like, Marin when Tom Kenny was on. But, like, I forgot that Tom Kenny and Bobcat Goldthwait had kind of grown up going through the comedy circuit together. And they were both... They joked about, like, they were both, it was, like, Tomcat and Bobcat. And apparently that came from, like, Barry Crimmins kind of gave them that name because they're all kind of from the same, like, area. Like they're not far from Syracuse, actually. Tom Kenny and Bobcat kind of grew up in that area.
Oh, wow.
And then went to do comedy in Boston and all that shit. Schenectady and blah, blah, blah.
Schenectady.
Schenectady.
But yeah, no, that movie's totally awesome. For all the things I just said.
Yep. Strong recommendation.
Holla.
Dave, you saw some stuff, didn't you?
I saw some stuff. Were you done?
I saw a movie called Turbo Kid. I don't really want to, like... like, it was decent. I have enough to say, but it's hard to kind of describe what it is without, like, showing you guys. Like, I don't think any of you guys saw a trailer yet for this. This was kind of very... Yeah. I'll briefly say, like, it's an independent flick that's... It's very in the 80s nostalgia realm. It's sort of billed as, like, a kid Mad Max throwback kind of thing. It's produced... mostly produced by the guy that directed Hobo with a Shotgun.
Okay.
And...
Wait, who's in this movie?
Michael Ironsides is the villain, which is great. But everything else is... It's weird because the tone of the trailer is very different than what the movie ended up being. Like, I like the movie. I don't give it, like, a huge recommendation. It's fun, like... Like, the movie is, like, everybody, you know, it's post-apocalypse, it has, like, it's basically like the apocalypse happened in the 80s, and there's just 80s shit around, but it's not being too referential, it's just kind of, that's what everything's made of, almost. It's almost like a Lego world of 80s stuff. And everybody's riding BMXs to get around, because it's funny, basically. Like, there isn't enough, like they try and make... Everything is kind of done as cliches, like stock character kind of things to kind of poke fun in that sense.
Okay.
The main character, like, you've got this main kid who, you know, his parents are dead, he's grown up in the wasteland kind of thing. He fantasizes about this comic book series and he kind of outfits himself in it and eventually finds this tech from the character the comic book character was after. And sort of becomes this superhero kind of thing off of that. He's got sort of a manic pixie-esque 80s pink girlfriend that's kind of really annoying for the first half that's following him around. And they're kind of supposed to be the grounded story. The problem is, like, they're not a ton of fun until about halfway. The villains are enjoying the shit out of this landscape. And what I didn't get from the trailer, like, the trailer is just kind of like, this is just very poppy fun, but the whole thing is very gory. And that's what I didn't expect.
Oh.
So you've got this very, like, the movie's trying to have a lot of heart with your main kid and the girl and, you know, their whole landscape, and there's, you know, actual danger around. But then, like, the villains have, like, spinning buzzsaw hands that they're shooting out at people, severing heads and having huge trauma-esque, like, explosions of blood. And, like, that's what the, like, the movie having cartoonish gore fun is what it makes, like, the best stuff.
Wow.
So it's, like, when you build up to that, like, that's a ton of fun. Like, and Michael Ironsides is having just a great time being a pompy villain with an eye patch, with a metallic eye patch, screaming
at
him. Like,
name just
yeah.
Michael Ironside?
I know.
You call him Old Ironside.
Old Ironside. I'm like
just shooting cannonballs.
Because it seems like that should be his name.
Yeah, I know.
Old Michael Ironsides.
Like, let's... Like, at some point, he, the villain, Mr. Michael Ironsides, has taken a character, put them in a chair, opened up their guts, and tied their intestines to a rubber band that he has tied around the back wheel of a bicycle, a mounted bicycle, that he has his henchmen sitting on. He gets the information he needs immediately from this guy, and he's just let me go, just let me go. He's, we took too much time setting this up. So, of course, they wheel his fucking intestines out on the bike.
Oh my
and
God, that's
like, all of it, like, and all of that stuff is so much fun. Like, all of the action is just, is everything, like, anyone that saw Hobo with a Shotgun is kind of very similar, you know, however you want to describe that, like, non-realistic gore fun that is hard for some of us to justify when we're talking to people that don't like gore whatsoever. But it's just fucking fun. But the actual, like, when the movie's trying to actually have heart, I wish it had a better writer, I guess. So it's kind of uneven in that sense, but like Legend, it's fun to follow the villains around. All right. And I saw that in the screening room, so it's a cool movie, support independent film. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'd say in a similar... in a surprisingly similar vein, I finally caught Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Oh,
that's on Netflix.
That's been
now.
On my queue, yeah.
Yeah, it's the Steve Carell, Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
From the year of apocalypse movies, 2013.
Right.
That
none
was
of
the,
which I've seen yet.
The World's... You saw The World's End.
Oh, I didn't see The World's End,
yeah.
Right. I just didn't see This is the End.
Okay, yeah. That was funny. That was funny, too. This one... This is a movie that I liked and enjoyed the whole way through, but, like, in a similar vein, it doesn't really know whether it wants to be a satire, a la something like Shaun of the Dead or The World's End, or if it wants to be, like, this very serious, heartfelt movie. And so, unfortunately, like, again, this is a movie that I really, really liked, except for the fact that the relationship that develops between Steve Carell and Keira Knightley, I just don't mind. And it's not for want of their performances. Their performances are both excellent. It's just the way their arcs are plotted feels unearned.
Yeah.
Other than that, it is a lovely little film with a lot of, like, comedian cameos.
Yes.
Patton Oswalt is there. Of course, and what's his name from Silicon Valley? The guy that plays
Kumail. T.J. Miller.
The guy that's the huge douchebag.
Yeah. The guy that I feel like I shouldn't like, but still enjoy in pretty much everything
yeah.
he shows up. He's Weasel in Deadpool.
Okay,
he will be Weasel.
So I caught that, and then caught a double feature of let's just call this. Dave and Weiss's art house movie moment. Watched back-to-back Incoherent Vice and Boyhood.
Oh, wow.
Well, I totally
that
just called
been...
it Incoherent
Yes, you did.
Yes.
Uh-oh. Yes. Well, because that's pretty true.
But
I enjoyed the movie, and it is.
Oh, Jan's going to be pissed at me that I stole her joke, though.
Oh.
She fell asleep halfway through, and when she woke up, she was like, fuck this movie, I'm going to bed. It should be called Incoherent Vice, am I right?
No, the good one, well, good, you know what? That's payback for fucking that movie in high school where Matt Damon's on goddamn that boat.
Fucking The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, that's payback for The Talented Mr. Ripley. You can tell her that.
Is this something that she made us all go to see?
No, we all went to her house.
We were over at her house,
I don't know
who was all over there, but I didn't fall. I was dying while we were fucking watching, though. I don't think I fell asleep. You never fell asleep, but yeah, we watched The Talented Mr. Ripley, and it was
some of her college friends were there too. I think so.
Yeah,
like, I remember being at like a packed house where all the girls were riveted and all the guys
Dave,
were like,
"Were you even there for that?" I don't know if you were there.
No, maybe
I think
not.
It was an odd bunch of people. She might have just She might have just invited us down because we were up hanging out, like me, you, and George. And she was like, "Yeah, come over." We were like, "Sure, we'll go down and hang out with girls and Jana."
It was one of the most stereotypical, like, gender, like, cutoff that I've ever been in.
We were just like, we gotta get the fuck out of here and go shoot some stuff.
Yeah, we need to punch each other right now.
I've seen that movie, but I don't remember watching it.
See, the thing with Paul Thomas Anderson, I think, like, that a lot of his films, and, like, I had a lot of fun with him.
Too. It was a beautiful film on a moment-to-moment basis. Every scene was great, and...
See, the thing is, like, and I haven't gotten to do that, and I really want to with The Master, but I really want to with Inherent Vice. And There Will Be Blood, too. It's just, like, they're movies built to watch again to kind of, like, soak it in.
Yeah,
like, they're
very dense.
They're very dense movies, and
hey, Dave,
don't...
Where can I plug in? Okay.
You can plug in, there's another...
Wink.
I'm feeling it out for you.
Theater?
Yeah.
What did we go see in the theater? Was it last week or two? Was it that recently?
Yeah. Alright, anyways.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, Incoherent Vice. A big part of the joy for me was just hearing the Thomas Pynchon's language.
It's not charging.
I think we loosened it.
Right. It's charging, Dave.
Now it's charging.
I still have never read any, unfortunately.
Neither have I.
Okay.
But it's very clear, like, what era, you know, in writing. I have read other writers in that were writing in sort of a similar. They reminds me a lot of John Kennedy Toole and Kurt Vonnegut. I just take it as sort of the back of the box called it the noir to end all noirs. And it's,
I mean, like, Pynchon is known for being postmodern. Like, anytime I've heard postmodern, he's in the fucking sentence. So, like, it being, I don't know, like, I'm kind of in love with that setting of just kind of, like, the flip side of the early 70s where, like, you know, when I grew up with, you know, especially, like, my parents that were very into the illusion of the 60s, but seeing people like, you know, Fear and Loathing and Inherent Vice, where it's kind of like the people that saw, you know, as Fear and Loathing said, after the water broke of the 60s and everyone kind of like fell into what the world actually was. And kind of like that heartbreak of the post-60s and like the wandering writers trying to figure out the world kind of thing.
Yes, that feeling is full in force in this movie.
Who was the... Well, for one, not to be like all the interviews I listened to are on Marin, but Paul Thomas Anderson was talking about how the biggest challenge of that movie was trying to keep it separate from The Big Lebowski, because The Big Lebowski took so much from that movie. So there was kind of like...
From the book?
From the book, sorry.
Okay, wow, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Because it's kind of like where that roaming, you know, slacker kind of character comes from.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's kind of interesting to see it with that eye.
That's a really interesting comparison to me. Yeah. And totally establishes this sort of precedent for, you know, what this... And Jan, I don't think, does not care to bother with the context.
Sure.
Of, you know, that sort of background.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even without that stuff, though, I mean, yes, it's an indecipherable noir. You know, call it
Yeah,
you know, a postmodern... noir. You could even consider it a borderline parody if it wasn't treated so delicately and beautifully.
Right.
Yeah, no, just great performances, great scenes.
Who was the fucking, the cameo with the chief? Who was, that Martin Short?
Martin Short was the dentist.
He was the dentist. Yes, okay, no, that's what I was thinking of, though. I thought he had a lot of fun in that role.
Oh, yes, oh, God.
God.
Well, and because it's not the sort of thing he, it's not full-out farce,
yeah,
like he
yeah.
typically does in that kind of role. You know, this is not the role that he played on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, although it may as well.
I didn't get that far.
Oh, okay. Well, but it's very similar, except in a movie that is a bit more, you know, takes itself more seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
it's funny, like, you're talking about Jan falling asleep during the movie, and I'm just like, fuck, I really want to see that movie again. I've listened to that soundtrack a lot.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a great soundtrack.
Yeah. And then the next night we watched Boyhood, which is a lovely movie. My only knock, and I can't remember now if this was a common knock against it the critics made, was that occasionally some of the soundtrack choices felt a little too on the nose. Like, hey, guess what year it is now by what's playing on the radio in the background.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know if I read that per se, but I could definitely, like, see that, yeah.
Yeah, but
I liked when it was more, like, to me, I thought the stuff that aged it the best was, like, stuff like the cars and, like, the back, like, watching... like, kind of little stuff like that, whereas, like stuff around the house where I'm just like, oh, that has changed, like, from the beginning. It's just, oh, shit, look at that, you know?
What was, I think, the most uncanny for me watching that movie was watching adults age in real time.
Yes.
Because
yeah, yeah, yeah.
it's one thing to take a child character and age them by casting multiple children, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But... you know, you then in those types of movies, in any other movie that would span 15 years, you would just put makeup
right.
on these adults. And it is just, it is wildly uncanny seeing
yeah.
Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke age
uh-huh.
this realistically.
Yeah.
yeah. I
it's
mean,
crazy.
It's, that was the weirdest thing to me. That
uh-huh.
was what sort
She
of
showed it a little more than he did for
well,
most
you know,
of it.
Girls.
But girls.
Sorry, ladies.
I love that you fucking sexist.
Yeah. Like, you talented Mr. Ripley loving motherfuckers. Watch that movie. You know, I saw that movie early enough. Maybe that movie's great now. I don't fucking know. I'm not going
so.
Back, but.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets killed on a boat.
Yep. With an oar. That's all I remember.
Yep. Me too.
Why does that stand out?
Because it was the movie. The moment something happened.
It's like, oh shit, they're fighting.
Yeah.
He's really dead now. Okay, I hope you're happy.
He didn't get killed. Not in real life. That
no,
happens.
They know something that we don't.
Actor secret.
Yeah. You want to know how Phil Seahawk really
if
died?
You're in the guild, you know.
Yeah. But how did you feel about pacing? Because I thought that movie moved pretty damn well for being 3 hours.
I would agree, except
yeah.
for the point at which we had to stop and, like, go to the bathroom in the middle, and
okay.
we saw that,
the
you know,
time, yeah.
and we're like, oh my god, the movie's only half done?
Yeah.
Jesus.
yeah,
but, you know, like, while watching it, it never felt overlong.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and this has been said, but, you
uh-huh.
know, it's thank god that that kid, you know,
yeah.
is...
In a quarter mile, turn right onto I-70 East.
Perfectly well, you know. His
right.
his acting is natural enough that you sort of buy that, you know, he's not some great actor, but he's also not so terrible. He's just kind of being himself.
Yeah.
He really suits that part, and so, you know, you have to sort of assume that as this movie developed, Linklater, you know, sort of talked to him about where he was in his life and what
mm-hmm.
sort of stuff is he
oh.
into, and... It's fucking
yeah.
McDonald's. And that was... the only thing that took me out of it was knowing, you know, second-guessing everything. Like, wow, what must have gone into making this decision and this
uh-huh.
decision, knowing how long...
Turn right onto I-70 East signs for Washington, D.C.
Does anyone need to stop and go to the bathroom or anything?
I'm good, actually.
I'm good.
Okay.
No.
I'll probably...
But if you need...
Surprising.
A little while, but...
Continue on I-70
right?
East for 76
what?
Miles.
What, were you vote to see if you need to stop the car?
Yeah.
Or, oh.
You put a thing in. No, it's not... Is there an app?
We used to do this in Ben's car.
The hanging chats?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm not familiar with Ben Car Custom.
As soon as you kind of need to use the bathroom, you let people know. That way, you know, you're not everyone's sitting in the car needing to pee and nobody's going, oh, I don't want to be that first guy.
Yeah.
But that
I
way...
I thought, like, you put stuff. A quarter up on the dash or something.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, I know when I was driving, I was like, we're going to stop as little as possible.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Get your food and pee and we're going. One stop.
Well, I don't know everybody's bladder, so...
Yeah. I've known you for a long time, not so much your bladder.
Nope. Hey, I know that both of us have pretty good bladders. Yeah. I know that for road trips.
Know your bladder.
Know your bladder.
Get to know who in X-Strike has the weakest bladder.
Oh, that is fucking neat.
It is Steve.
Well, it's not weak. It's tiny.
We're still good, right, Tim? We're still recording.
Yeah, we are still recording this awesome bladder talk.
Yay. Welcome to Bladder Talk. That is a great name for
We should probably wrap this up, though.
Oh, but I'm not done.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying.
I know, I could talk a lot more about that movie, but...
I'm letting people know
that
we're an hour and 40 minutes on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is going to be a good one. They're going to love
listening. Length to does not girls. Equal
girl. Quality.
or girth.
Heard of your first.
I just want to mention, A, I found a copy of Hyrule Historia at my local library, and I've really just thumbed through it preliminarily, because that thing is just...
I got a copy of it.
Oh, man. That is quite the tone.
Did you see the Super Mario book?
Yeah, I got that. I have that on my phone.
I haven't gotten it yet, but free PDF.
I haven't gotten that.
I really want to go through it. I have put a lot more time into reading Ready Player One.
Oh, okay.
And I am definitely hooked by the plot now. I still think that it is a story, a good story told rather artlessly.
Yeah. No, I totally feel like it's a first book.
Yes.
Like, I make no argument on that. And unfortunately, that's sort of what I've heard about his follow-up Armada, is that it doesn't really...
Also feels like his first book.
Kind of, in that it hasn't been, like, a great leap in his writing, but...
Why would he change? He sold a deal amount of books for his first outing, so... It's what people want, right?
Well, sure. I mean, like, I hope he writes a ton of books just in general so that he can grow as an author, but...
Yeah.
I'm glad you're digging the plot.
I'm digging the plot. The machinations upon which the plot pivots are good and well-structured, and his world-building is still very, very good. You know, it feels like he's very thorough
in
building this future world, except for the couple... There are a couple things that I feel like he's thrown in deliberately to show us the things that have not changed in the 30 years in the future. That's been like he'll talk about how, did you see how that we're now that we're famous? Did you see that sketch they did about us on SNL? Totally just a show. Oh, they still have SNL in the future.
Right.
And
yeah.
He talks about posting things to YouTube, and that also feels deliberately there to show like. Yes, YouTube is somehow still the default, video posting. Nothing has superseded YouTube, and YouTube's only existed for 10 years.
No,
nothing will supersede it in the next 30. I find that a bit implausible.
The YouTube thing really stood out to me as well. Like, the SNL one I thought was kind of a joke at the time, and then I'm just kind of like, oh, I guess he's... Like, to me, it was just kind of either not lazy... Lazy in the sense that, like, either you should elaborate on that still being there or not at all.
Because he goes to great lengths to talk about, like, the way things have changed. And so when he just lets hang that something in particular is still the same, it's like, but why?
Right.
Almost everything else has changed. The only other thing that jumps out at me, and this is probably a stupid nitpicky thing, but it's kind of fundamental to the way the story works, is that... I'm in the middle part of the story. I'm in level 2, where our hero has upgraded his virtual reality console just the visor and haptic gloves that he had to this whole full-body rig with motion, with a treadmill and a motion chair to simulate one-to-one anything you could possibly do. Now, because he's got this rig, he's also working out. He begins the book as a chubby kid, and now he's talking about how I had a flat stomach for the first time in my life. And I, and like, the thought struck me, wouldn't interfacing with this game be so much easier if you could just sit and use the gloves? Because he describes, in the, at the start of the book, he describes that you walk around and you navigate by a series of discrete, like, finger twitches. And now suddenly he really has to walk and, like, sword fight, do all that stuff for real? That sounds a lot harder than effectively using a controller to play a video game. In what way? Like, if he's serious about being the best at this, and, like, you know, winning the game, why not do the thing that lets you control that game way easier than to have to actually have those same skills in real life with this one-to-one virtual bodysuit. It makes no sense.
No, I get
it's a certain degree of fidelity of the controls.
Like, if you want to live in this virtual world and do regular person things and, like, have sex, and all, okay, I get that. But he's a competitive player. In no way does this stuff assist him in being able to do things that other people can't. So why would you do all that?
The rig he got, the haptic sensors work so that he can experience everything, but he still uses the twitch. When you're talking about, like, the one-to-one movements, that's when he was in, like, his exercise program. So, like, he would only be using the full motion body stuff while he was using the exercise program.
I feel
and
like
the suit would give him resistance.
I feel like the treadmill that he's walking on is there all the time.
Is it?
Yeah, I feel like the way he described that stuff, that's something to simulate, because it can simulate uphill inclines and different kinds of terrain. They
give the read it more recently than I did, so.
They use the exercise example. Like, that's the prime example of him using all this stuff, but as they're describing each piece of equipment piece by piece, it seems to apply in all aspects of the Oasis, not just the actual... At least that's how I read it.
I think that's how I read it. Yeah, I just never thought about the...
There's one line where he says, I got a lot of exercise just playing in the Oasis, just, you know, doing all the stuff, doing quests and stuff, so he's really doing all that stuff now.
Yeah, well, that's that then.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Nope, can't argue that. I mean, like, to me, that's... I mean, like, I don't know if I would categorize it as nitpicky, but I think that's one of those things where a good story is going to make you not care about that kind of a detail. Yeah. And I'm very interested still as the movie comes closer and is pushing ahead. Like,
oh, I'm wildly interested. I have a feeling this is going to be a much better movie than it is a book.
I think it might... I think if this pulls Spielberg back to, like...
Fun Spielberg.
Like, because I've liked a lot of his serious stuff lately, but I haven't really liked his... Well, I think we are very negative on War of the Worlds because it was horrible. But, like, you know...
I only hate bad movies.
Yeah. Shit like Munich and, what he did in the last, like... There was one in the last, like, 5 years that I also enjoyed, but they were the more, you know, World War II kind of movies. So I really hope this puts him in a good spot.
He rediscovers that sense of unbridled fun that every other... that J.J. Abrams wants so hard to emulate sometimes.
And he'll never get to...
He'll never get to.
The Birth Movie's Death that I read is doing a month-long breakdown of, like, Spielberg, just from, like, one of the writers was having revisited a couple movies. It was just, like, the way... It just struck him how effortless, like, even in his flops, Spielberg just has all of this language of cinema that's just part of him. It's not like he's trying. It's just the way his eye perceives a lot of things, and just, like, trying to break down a lot of these movies. Like, even... Because I watched recently his first movie, Amblin, which is Amblin came from.
Yeah. Right.
From 1968. This, like, half-hour short film about a couple kids hitchhiking made it to YouTube, which is a very, you know, rough kind of thing. Yeah. And it's awesome in that he's still Spielberg. He's 22 when he's making that movie. He made Jaws at 29, so go ahead and say, fuck you, Spielberg. Yeah. As we're sitting here in our 30s.
What have we done?
What do we know? We didn't make Jaws.
Jaws. Every day, I wake up and I compare myself to Steven Spielberg.
Where's my hat? But just like so much
of... Or his non-union Mexican equivalent.
Like so much of the fun he's had. Even though like the article is talking about how much he was getting out of his system, because it's like a lot of stuff taken from French New Wave and a lot of like the experimental foreign shit, like in a way of these static shots, but there's also a million shots that you're like, that's from Close Encounters, that's from Jaws, that's okay. It's just, it's part of like everything he makes is sort of there, which is why I really want to like see this reawakening, and I hope that this movie that's based in the world that he created,
yeah,
sort of brings him back in a way.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Do the war game sequence.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this podcast.
It's a good thing no news happened.
Yeah. It's been a month. Some of it's like a month old news. It's old.
Right.
You've already known about it for a while.
Yeah.
It's nothing earth shattering. All right. Thank you for listening to this long, long drive to MAGFest Classic.
Yes, where we talk nothing about MAGFest Classic.
Yeah, we'll be talking, I'm sure we'll be talking a lot at MAG Classic weeks to
maybe
come.
Maybe on the way back.
We'll be talking to friends, we'll be doing all kinds of fun things.
Fat fucking Gatsby.
Fat fucking Gatsby.
You fat fucking Gatsby.